You are listening to a sermon by Jeff Borden, recorded on Sunday, January 5th, 2025, at Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you, Shan. Good morning, everybody. And Shan, I was looking at my LinkedIn, and I am there. That's my full name, Jeffrey Dempsey. Maybe I need to change that. So, good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me. I had to actually ask Kevin, when did I speak last? And I remember being at UBC, I think it was in 2018, and then in the pandemic, 2022. So it's nice to come back. I really appreciate that. I'm honored. And the scripture choice, Eric, one of our board members, a member here, brought a brochure from Place Refuge from many years ago, and that scripture is on it, and I thought, that just fits. So thank you, Eric, for that. Let me get my iPhone so I can have my clock to keep me on track and not go over 15 minutes. The topic healing and wellness happens in social spaces is deeply important to me. As a matter of fact, when I was sitting here listening to the music and looking at everybody coming together, it actually applies everywhere, doesn't it? We come together in community, we sing, we heal, we help each other, we support each other. That would be the premise of a healthy community coming together. So it doesn't just apply, in my opinion, to people recovering from substance use, but to all communities. This topic here that I've chosen, I did this in Yucatan, Mexico, in November. We did it over 12 hours over 2 days, so I'm not going to do 12 hours, of course, but it's a deep subject because there's many factors to it. So I'm going to try to, today, just give a little bit of context of why I chose this, why it's relevant in the work that I do, and I will say we do with my board of directors, staff, and the residents. It's a collaborative approach of wellness, which informs, from my 13 years of Place Refuge anyways, that healing and wellness definitely happens in social spaces. There's a couple of scholars I paid attention to over the last 10, 15 years. Both are from Simon Fraser University. One is Dr. Bruce Alexander. In his work, he's written a lot of books. One that stands out for me called The Globalization of Addiction. It's a real deep dive into Canada and our drug policies, how we're working with addictions. Dr. Julian Summers, someone that I'm really paying attention to lately because his work is, and the research he's doing is exactly what we're doing at Place of Refuge. So I'm going to give you just a little context, if I can, very briefly. If we look at it, since 2016, we've lost 21,000 people to overdose deaths of opioids, mainly fentanyl. If we look at 2024, in the first 9 months of that year, we lost 1,750 people in British Columbia. Like, that's staggering. It's unprecedented. And I spoke on this in 2018, and we're still here. But those numbers are actually increasing. To give a little further context around, and this will blend into what I do at Place Refuge, and the model of care that we are doing that is absolutely effective and working, and we need a whole lot more of it. In early 2021, Dr. Summers and a group of doctoral students from SFU did research, and they wanted to look at the harm reduction model we have, which is a safe drug policy, which we're all aware of. And he was also with these students looking at other options and what would be the most beneficial when they're seeing results in wellness. So the areas he was focusing on were, you know, employment rehabilitation and social integration over easy access to drugs. The research was incredible. And it came into what they came up with was having people together in social settings and safe housing with options and supports for education, employment, good food, safety, a healthy environment that's encouraging and supportive, abstinence-free. The results were phenomenal. He presented this to the provincial government in early 2021, and there was a pretty cool reception to it. And further to that, the government demanded destruction of all the data. It was actually wiped out. And there's lots, if you Google Julian Summers, you'll see his work and the research he did. So what he's looked at is, what we're doing is the safe supply that we're giving out there is actually a detriment. It's actually, again, further marginalizing the marginalized population and containing it, where we're keeping people actively addicted to mood altering substances without having options for housing. You know, we have in British Columbia anyways, we probably have one of the worst records in Canada with housing in Metro Vancouver. It's just not working. In other words, we don't, the programs that are delivering long-term housing or abstinence-based treatment, we need a whole lot more of it. We have some, and what's happening in Vancouver, Metro Vancouver, if you will, is effective. There's just not nearly enough of it. So when I go to the downtown east side and I talk to people or colleagues of mine, the need and the desire to get out of there and get well is great, but the access is really limited. So what we're finding ourselves in is the population is increasing with substance use, the fentanyl price is getting worse, and we're trying, and it's justified partially, we're saving lives by providing safe places to use the drugs. And as we all know, if you look at the media, it's going into our hospitals, it's going everywhere, it's impacting every sector, and we don't have the supports, be it for just addiction or the mental health supports, and that's due to closure of places like that, Riverview and so on and so forth. On and on it goes. So what we have is a problem, plural problems that are expanding rapidly. What I found in place of refuge, over the last 13 years is when you have a community of people that all come from that environment and you provide them a supportive, encouraging environment, one that I call creating a space for people to legitimize themselves and take their own leadership. So in other words, rather than, you know, we're here to fix you, this is what we're going to do, we provide the supports and the space for them to leverage their own leadership and their own voice. And what I've seen is great things happening. When you put people together in a community like that, and they're abstinent, and their body, they're taking care of their physical needs, their emotional needs, and they're doing that together with each other. And what that does is it creates a healthy community which fosters wellness. And so when these guys at Place Refuge, for example, move out, they've had a couple of years, some of them even longer, to practice that. So the integration into the community, back into the workforce or into education, is a lot more seamless. It's not shocking. So in my day, when I was was in addiction myself, back in the 80s, early 90s, I would go to treatment, come out and go, you're done. And I'd be like standing there and go, well, what do I do now? You know, I've had 30 or 60 days, but no follow-up supports or an environment that gave me life skills or gave me supports or brought me into the community. And so I ended up going through what I call the gerbil wheel of rehab, just in and out, wondering why I couldn't get it. Place of Refuge, as you know, and many of you showed up on November 24th to our new house on 48th, and I really appreciate that you took the time to come and take a look at what we're doing. We've expanded, we've doubled our capacity from 10 residents to 20. We could easily, thank you, Does my voice sound a bit rough? That comes from music days. Excuse me. We've expanded our services to serving 20 men. And over Christmas, we've just put our first four men in this new house. If we had 10 of these homes, they'd be full. That's the need. So we're doing a very small footprint right now, but we're looking at expanding, but the need is great. We've also expanded the program. It used to be a couple of years. Now it's been expanded to 3 years. And some of the guys in the house have been there 4 years and they don't want to go. I had one guy that was with us for almost 5 years and he moved out and he phoned me and he said, I'd like to come back and could I contribute back into the community? So I developed a program called peer support, resident peer support. So this guy, John, who has left at 5 years clean, has come back as a live-in resident support, modeling what he learned at Place of Refuge. So it has like a contagion effect. They're looking at John going, well, how did you do this? How did you do that? And John helps him out with all those living skills in the community. So we're onto something really good there. What we're doing is basically further supporting the wellness of the community by having the very community support itself. Makes sense. As opposed to, you know, I'm the expert, I'll lead you to wellness. It's what I call a horizontal structure. That we don't, or even myself, who's my key staff member that I work with, we don't put importance on our titles. When we interview people, we bring them in, we say, you're interviewing us, we're interviewing you. It's mutual, it's reciprocity. We're helping each other in conversation to see if this environment would be the right fit for you. And so we do it that way because it's a way of working with people that's eye level, not me looking down or them looking up, but looking at each other. And by doing that, you create what's called a cooperative framework. That's one key component of the model. So the cooperative framework of how everyone lives together, Reeve and myself follow it too. So we ask, we don't tell people, we invite them, here's a way to come into this environment, but we do it too. I call it withness. We're all doing this together. And great things happen because what I see is everybody interacting at an equal level playing field. And the conversations that happen, I call it in the in-between spaces. There's some formal therapeutic supports that happen, of course. But most of it is the interactions throughout the day that we observe and partake in with these men, that we see them coming together and they create a family. Some of them come in and they have a family. Some of them don't. We notice some of them acting like brothers, the bigger brother, the younger brother, you know. We have some, the instigator. We have, you know, we have issues. If I look back at the last 13 years of working in this kind of a framework, the biggest fights we see in the house, and I'm not kidding, is who took my ice cream? Like, I'm not kidding. Who took that out of the fridge? I remember that when I was a kid with my brother. We've never had an act of physical violence, not a single one. We've had a few tempers. But that's people getting bad moods, people, you know, being together, that happens. But there's been never an instant where it's felt unsafe. People can come there and we want them to feel that they're in a gentle, loving, safe environment. That means don't play your music really loud. Don't yell, calm, gentle, because we don't know when somebody walks in the door from their day, what's happened with them. We don't know. So by having that kind of environment, healing takes place because it takes a while for their body to catch up with their mind. They come in, they look at the environment and go, okay, what is this? Yet another place. I've been through so many treatment centers, but after they're there for a little while, because it's so gentle and supportive, that their body catches up with it and they go, oh, this is a good place to live. The majority of the men come in and say, we asked for a 3-month commitment. You know, it's not written down. We ask for that because we don't have a high turnover. All of them say, yeah, 3 months, maybe 6 on the outside. Almost all of them been there a couple of years. So we say, yeah, it's fine, you know, 3 months, whatever works for you. And then they'll come up and say, actually, I'd like to stay a little longer. So that's informing myself and the board of directors, all of us, that this model really, really works. Our hope is, with Place of Refuge, is to expand further. There's a real need, of course, for women, women with children, women that are victims of intimate partner violence. There's a huge need for that in Metro Vancouver. That's something we're looking at that we'd like to do down the road. Right now, with 2 houses and the second one, which will be full pretty soon, and just Reeve and myself, it's busy. It's going to get a lot busier. But the work, what I can tell you and share with you, is it works. And this work by Dr. Summers, who I want to connect with further, because I think his research is absolutely beautiful and brilliant into the way he's thinking for certainly the province of BC to move forward. I hope that happens. I'm not a big supporter of safe drug supply, the rate that it's going, because it's keeping people addicted, keeping them separated from our communities, and not creating a space for them to legitimize themselves and be a part of our communities. And so that's the hope, but that's going to be a lot of work. But Place of Refuge, and what we're doing, is doing a contribution, and with support from our churches, our supporting churches, is making this become realized. And I'm right at 15 minutes and 21 seconds, so I'm going to hit my timer and stay at the time. I know that was a lot very quickly. I hope that can give you a little bit of context to what we do and my approach to the work. And if anybody has questions, I remember last time in 2018, I thought you were a tough crowd, because I realized I was sitting in front of a lot of academics, and I went, okay, I'm in a clever. So, but if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.